Welcome to Spartan Up Podcast. We're here at Citi Field, Spartan Stadium race going on. Joe did some incredible interviews, including Scotty Smiley.
Yeah, listen, it was an amazing interview. It was amazing. Not only Scotty Smiley, but his wife was here as well, Tiffany. Together, an amazing team. But Scotty Smiley was a wounded Army officer, West Point graduate. He became the first soldier in the United States Army to return to active duty while 100% blind.
In history. Never been done before.
Never been done before in history. It's been done a couple times that I'm aware of afterwards. But he was the first guy, which means he has to trailblaze. One, he has to still meet all the criteria, and he has to fight through bureaucracy. And that's really kind of, to me, a lot of the interest of
the story. And something that came out in this interview that they're going to see that was amazing, he didn't fight through it on his own.
Right.
His wife, the stand she took for him, unbelievable. Really incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
If he's Rocky Balboa, his wife is Apollo Creed.
and Mick and Adrian.
Yeah, cool.
Speaking of standing, who's standing here? We got retired Colonel Tim Nye. We got Sephra the Seed Huntress. We got Johnny. We got Joe DeSanta, founder and CEO of Spartan Race. We got Marion, our producer, who keeps us on track. And you know what? Spartan Up, what are we? We're grit and resiliency partners. We're now up to 6 days a week where we've got somebody from our team who's going to be either YouTube, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe because every single day you're going to have somebody motivating you, ripping you off out of bed.
Thousands of people are telling me that literally when they wake up, this is the thing that gets them out of bed. Yeah. So it's free.
Awesome.
All you got to do is subscribe. You got to comment. And if you don't, we know where you live.
You should also stick around to the very end of the interview because what we do, the four of us get back together and we discuss what we took from the interview. So we'll have different perspectives on what this great interview had to say, in this case, Scotty Smiley, and just share with you what we got from it.
All right, Scott, do I refer to you as Major Retired Scott Smiley? How do I refer to you?
I like Scotty.
Scotty. All right, Scotty. So, Scotty, you had you got injured.
Yep.
At war.
Yep.
When was that?
April 6, 2005. I was a platoon leader in 1st Brigade, 25th Infantry Division, and just rules of engagement. You're not allowed to shoot unless you see an enemy and they have a weapon. I saw a vehicle lower in the back than the front, so it was suspicious. So as I yelled at him to get out of his vehicle, he raised his hands up in the air. I shot around, and then next thing I knew, my world went black. Woke up a little less than a week later in Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Lost both of my eyes, temporarily partially paralyzed on the right side of my body, and my world like turned upside down.
What had happened in the moment when it went dark?
Yeah, the man in the vehicle blew himself up, destroyed the vehicle, sent shrapnel into both of my eyes, which, the medical doctors calling back to my wife, Tiffany, they said, we've never seen this before. Like, he came face to face with a suicide bomber, and the only things that were injured were his eyes. So my good looks, I still have.
Nice.
Just with the destruction of his life, his desire was to kill and take out as many people. As far as I know, I was the only one that was permanently injured physically. Obviously, there's concussions and so on and so forth with the men that were in the vehicle. But for me, my life turned upside down.
When you pulled the trigger, he had his hands up. Do you recall that moment?
I do, but in faint glimpses, just with the brain injury that I had, and then the medicine they give you kind of has an amnesic effect, so you don't really remember everything. Well, at the same time, I've talked to a lot of the men that were there that day, and it has affected them. But for me, I've learned in life, when struggles and trials come, you have choices to make. What are you going to do? Sit and be down in the mire, or are you going to take what you've been given and still make something of your life and do something bigger and greater than you ever thought you could.
So it's an obstacle.
Exactly, beyond an obstacle. And, for me, my eyes, I knew what an optometrist was, but I'd never visited because my eyesight was amazing. I was Ranger qualified, airborne, scuba. I thought of serving my country and doing something amazing. And then when my eyesight is taken, one of the most under-recognized senses that we humans have.
Or appreciated.
Right. My life, it was like, what do I have to look forward to? I married an amazingly beautiful woman, spent my first anniversary away from her. And now I can't see her smile. I can't see the rainfall, the snowfall, the leaves change. I need someone to take me, tell me where the bathroom is. I realized that my life was going to be different. And at that time, I originally just went to the depths of despair and you know, being faithful and spiritual, turned my life from God, turned my life from my friends. I was angry, resentful.
So stop there for a second. So that's a week after the incident. You wake up, it's dark.
Yep. My mind is still in Iraq. That's what's crazy.
Okay.
Because I don't know what happened.
Your mind is still in Iraq. So when do you start to spiral downward?
It was once I began to realize something happened to me. I lost my eyes and really understanding I'm not in a dream. This is, I would like to say.
Because it's surreal in the beginning.
Correct.
I guess,
it's right? surreal. And in my mind, I'm just in a nightmare.
And it's going to be fine. My eyes are going to open. Right. And I'm going to be, right?
But when you wake up and the nightmare is still playing and you can't get out of it, you can't wake up.
So is that a month later? Is that?
No, it was probably only probably 10 days later. Once the medicine and my recovery really began, they take me out of the medically induced coma. I really began to understand where I was, what had happened. And as the story was repeated back to me several times, I understood this is my new life.
New reality.
Yeah, I had to relearn how to, you know, move. I couldn't move my right foot. My right hand was weak. I didn't know how I was going to live life.
Yeah, so why don't you just give up at that point?
But in a certain sense, mentally, which is our man's strongest but weakest platform, I chose to give up. I chose to deny God. I chose to be mean to my wife, mean to my friends. And that was the darkest that I'd ever been. And for me, you know, men and women would want to come and congratulate me, or, you know, not congratulate, but thank me for my service, like Gary Sinise, Toby Keith, just amazing men. And I said, no, I don't want it. And this little boy who I had taught Sunday school at West Point wanted to come and say hi. And I just started crying because in my mind, if this little boy still looked up to this broken, busted, you know, man,
angry
man, how could I tell him no? If he still looked at me, and a little glimpse of thought that came, I can still be used. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know how I'm going to do it. But the route that I chose to turn from God and to be angry wasn't going to get me anywhere. And that's when I realized the importance of forgiveness. You know, forgiving the man who blew himself up, took his life, forgiving myself, and asking God to forgive me. That's when I really began to move forward. But I say that was the beginning. It was still a long, long, laborious journey.
That's a question I have. Like at that moment, the boy comes over, you start crying, it's like a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Is it months, years? How long does it take at that point?
For me, it was, in my opinion, it was a miraculous journey that I began to take a step forward. I wanted to get out of bed, take a shower. I hadn't showered since I'd been in the hospital bed for like 10 days. I still had like Iraqi dirt on me, and my wife, Tiffany, was like, stay bed, like, you know, what are you doing? But it was the best but worst shower of my life. Best because, or I'll say worst, because it was miserable. I barely had the energy to stand up. It felt like prickles. There was like a Brillo pad on me as the nurses were washing me. But the best because I was taking a stance. I was taking a step forward, one step at a time. But I was not willing to sit in bed, be lethargic, and mope.
And be mean.
But instead turn and look and be happy and wake up every morning with a smile on my face.
So it's not the obstacle we're presented with. I hear this all the time, right? It's how you react to it.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like, is it an obstacle that you just turn away from? Well, I can't go there. Or how are you going to, you can repel from it. You can jump it. You can blow it up in place. You can go around it. There's 101 ways to not have the obstacle prevent you. It's just an opportunity that you can better yourself and be more positive in everything that you do and everywhere you go.
Let's back up. West Point, how'd you end up there?
Well, I had an older brother who was a junior, and it came down to a conversation with my mom and dad and I. And they said, well, where are you going to go? And I was like, well, I didn't make it anywhere. And they go, well, how do you know? I was like, I haven't gotten any letters. I said, well, what if you made it into West Point? Well, I go to West Point. What if you made it to Air Force? Well, I go to Air Force. And in the end, she goes, well, you made it into West Point. I was like, well, I'm going to West Point. But for me, it rewinds backwards a little bit more, is I wanted to go to the best school. I wanted to learn as much leadership, get the best education that I could, because I knew that would potentially set me up for success in life. Whether it be a businessman, it didn't matter what. I knew I wanted the best college, and so I applied to the best. And obviously the military academy, in my humble opinion, is the best school in the world when it comes to leadership, education, and that's the reason I chose. And for me, in 1999, when I graduated high school, we were a country at peace. You know, there was no real war. There was no war on terrorism. There was no, you know, nothing had
happened. So you weren't seeking action. You were seeking leadership.
I was seeking leadership. And I'm not going to, well, I'm not afraid to say that it was more, I'm not going to say it was selfish, but I was looking for the best education. In my mind, I was going to do 5 years, get out. That's the commitment. 5 years of active duty service, 3 years of inactive ready reserve, get out, go to business school, become an amazing businessman. And, you know, the opportunities are endless. But it wasn't on my sophomore year when September 11th happened. And I began to see over the next year veterans coming back who had fought in Afghanistan. And I began to understand the importance that the freedoms in America are not free, that it takes men and women to give their lives and leadership to really promote the Constitution that we stand behind and what makes us who we are. And my attitude began to change of my service to my country. And then obviously in right before I graduated in May of 2003, in March of that same year, we went into Iraq. So my attitude really changed on my service and my duty to my country, and kind of involved with my wife, dated her since junior high, you know. But in the end, I realized it takes a family, it takes a community to really understand the importance of our Constitution and what it means to all of us.
It doesn't sound like you do. Do you have any regrets?
No regrets at all. If I had a decision to make a change, I would not change a thing. The academy I chose, the unit I chose to be in, the position that I placed myself, I take full responsibility for what had happened to me. I still wouldn't change a thing, because the opportunities that have been placed in front of me because of the decisions that not just I, my wife Tiffany made, we made together, and friends and family and loved ones have helped us, the opportunities have been endless. And it's because, as you had shared, the obstacles, plural, that had been placed in front of us, we never accepted. We went through them, we blasted through them, we went over them, we went around them, we went under them. And those opportunities, I don't believe, would have been present if I had done anything, if I had done something different. So I love the life that we're living. I love the opportunities that have been placed in front of us. And so for me, it's amazing to see the life that we're able to live.
You're awesome. Why don't we take a break? You and I will run the course. I'm going to duct tape my eyes so I can experience it like you.
Can I have a different partner?
and then we'll come back and finish this.
Sounds good.
All right. So Scotty's got another superpower, which is Tiffany, his wife. I wanted to talk to you a little bit. Are you like, you crack a whip every day, get everybody out of bed, or what's the story?
Well, I mean, Scotty's more the structure part of our family, so he's up early, and I'm like, dang, if he's up, I gotta get up, you know? But I purposely do things with my kids, with my families, with Scotty. Like, my boys, I put them in positions to fail. And I know that sounds weird or crazy, but I know if you can fail well,
you're going to succeed.
You're going to do it. You can do anything you want to do.
I like that.
And I've also
We're writing a parenting book. I'm not joking. Oh. And since you just said that, you're involved in the parenting book. You're taking a chapter.
Yes, yes. So my son, I'll never forget this. Yeah. He was 8, and I knew he wasn't prepared for this elite swim team.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't care. I'm going to take him. And he couldn't, it's this like tryout, it's intense. And like, parents are looking at me like, oh, are you ready for this? I'm like, you don't know why I'm here. Right. I'm not here to win. Right. I'm here to lose. And they said, okay, Grady, now you have to do the butterfly. And I saw the panic in his face.
Because he didn't know how to do it.
He didn't know how to do it. And he did it, and he looked like a slob, and he looked like a fool, right? Yeah. And he gets out of the water, and the coach came over and said, like, I rated him this, and that he was poor. And Grady said, came over, and he said, I heard what the coach said about me. And I said, good. Now let's go.
Nice.
But I think
I'm fired up again. Your whole family gets me fired up. I want to go knock out 300 burpees right now. I might move in with you guys.
But it's like, if you can fail well, and I've worked hard too. Like, my boys don't see a disability in Scotty. Right. I never wanted them to see that, yeah. that he was fully capable and fully able.
Right.
So when they see Scotty, they see someone fully capable. Like, oh, you can't drive? Who cares? Like, order an Uber. There are solutions to every single problem we face. Yeah. And so when Scotty was in the hospital and broken, I came in every day. I had my own struggles that he didn't see. It wasn't time for him to see them. But I would come in every day and I told him, I said, you're going to be a speaker, you're going to write a book, and you're going to be a teacher someday. And he would say, like, you're crazy. I can't even get out of bed and go to the bathroom. I was like, I don't care. I would come in the next day and I would say it again. And
you just made it the narrative. This is what we're doing.
Like, it was a perspective shift. Right. Everyone else was looking at this hopeless.
Right.
Like, you guys were so amazing. Like, you were the picture of the American dream. And Scotty was going to be this great leader. And now all is lost. But I was like, well, no, maybe it's not. Let me try this. Sure. I had nothing to lose, right? And the most dangerous person in the room is the one who has nothing to lose.
Sure.
I had nothing to lose. And that's how I stood up to the military and told them, no, I'm not signing the paperwork. And they thought I was crazy, but I'm like, no, you don't know. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I have a man in there who's going to be a leader someday. So, like, military leaders would come in there crying to me as they walk out the door. Like, this is hopeless. Like, he was such a good leader. And I would say, he still will be. Like, get on out the door. See you later.
I like it.
You know?
I like it.
Like, he still
By
will
the way,
be.
I hate to say this. They should do a movie on her, not you.
I agree. She looks a little better.
No, but it's like so watching Rocky Balboa over there.
Someone one time compared me to the girl. What's the... they're like... well, I think I'm a little softer than that, but... But, you know, and Scotty's like, well, I can't write a book. Tiffany said my English professor... asked, like, if English was my second language on my first essay at West Point. Like, I can't write a book. And I was like, no, you will. You know, and now I look back and I'm like, we limit ourselves in what we're capable of. And so for my boys and our family, I want no limits. And to have no limits, you have to be willing to fail well.
I love it. I love it. My kids are coming here tomorrow morning with my wife. I'm gonna tell them they got to do 30 laps.
Yeah.
On the course. You didn't tell me that you stayed active duty. How long did it take for you? Because I didn't hear you.
Yeah. Again, it's the surrounding ourselves of friends and those that support us, and not just support us, but question us and push us to ensure that we're making the right decision. For me, when you lose both of your eyes, you know, the temporary partial paralyzation that occurred were profiles in the Army. And obviously, being blind, no blind person has ever stayed on active duty. I had to go to a medical evaluation. And what's crazy, when I was in the hospital...
So you're in the hospital, you meet the young boy, you start to deal with this reality.
Yeah.
How long then do you say, you know what, I'm staying in?
It was probably another year, but during that time, while in the hospital, I never knew this, but my wife was asked, who had the power of attorney, to sign the beginning process of the medical...
She wanted you back in.
It wasn't her choice. She felt it was not her choice to make. She knew I signed up for the military. She wanted me to fully recover and to make it, have it be my decision, not her decision. And those doctors and social workers and administration thought she was crazy. But again, it was men and women she surrounded herself that it took a year later that I went through the medical evaluation. They found me 100% disabled, unfit for service. But there's a caveat in the Army manual in the military that says you can still serve if you're still mentally fit and physically strong. And I, you know, for me, part of the duty, part of the service, as I shared earlier, 5 years of active duty service. I had only served 2 years. And I still wanted to give back to my country if I could in some manner, in some way. And
you wanted to deliver on your promise to get
exactly.
those 5 years done.
Yep. And being an infantryman, they never gave me a rifle back. I still don't know why. But I'm sure there's a good reason. But for me, it was you know, I knew there was amazing officers that taught me at West Point, and I asked the dean, is there any way? And he says, of course, you just got to get a master's. So 2 years at Duke University, was able to get my MBA from Duke at Fuqua School of Business, went back, became an instructor, and then my boss said, hey, Scotty, you know, after, you know, I'm on active duty now, I made the choice to continue to serve. He says, you know, you never really want to get brought into your boss's office and say, hey, we need to talk. And he says, you've done a phenomenal job. Do you want a company command? And it's a question. You're like, you remember I'm still blind. And he says, it doesn't matter. The men and women you constantly surround yourself with shows me and proves to me and those here at the academy that you can do anything that you set your mind to, that you would be beyond successful and an amazing asset. And so I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I was the commander of the Warrior Transition Unit at West Point, New York. That time we had two boys, my wife and I, and then pushed down to Georgia. And then my last duty station was at Gonzaga University, where I was working the ROTC program, had our third boy. And then for me, the Army was great, but, you know, all good things come to an end. And I think for me, it was time that I opened up a new chapter. I served a little less than 12 years of service, medically retired, and knew that something good was still going to happen.
And then you didn't feel like you accomplished enough, so you knocked out a movie?
Well, a movie was done on me.
Okay.
But so for me, I've always tried to stay in shape. You know, part of the Army, you know, you wake up early bird catches the worm, but it's when you begin to do physical training, physical activity, something that's attainable, something that's measurable. And so for me, I knew I wanted to stay in shape, and what more will make you in shape than a competition, than an event. And so I had some wild hair came out, and I said, asked my brother-in-law, hey, do you want to do an Ironman with me? And he like double took. He's like, yeah, I'd love to. We just have to ask our wives because the commitment. And so we trained for a little.
It's a very high. Yeah. I know Ironman very well. It's a very high divorce rate. So it was a good, true story. So
it is very true. Yeah. But when you marry, if you're married to a woman like I have, Tiffany, when she's kicking me out of bed, get to training. Aren't you supposed to run this morning? I was set up for success. And it was that day, you know, you wake up at 2:45, ready to do this event. It was one of the hottest days, 105 degrees in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I was hoping that they canceled the race. There's still a little fear.
Secretly.
Yeah. I don't think I publicly said it, other than I don't think I just said it. But for me, it was going through the event, and not just the swim, the bike, which I was on the tandem. Power, you know, I just hope my partner was pedaling. It was the difficulty, but it was the temperature. And it wasn't until 3 miles into the marathon I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up. The ambient heat off the ground was around 135 degrees. It was beyond miserable. The dropout rate was the highest in Ironman history. They ran out of ambulances to pick up people. They were borrowing trucks. People would come back to the thing and say it's mayhem out there, which doesn't give family members any type of confidence, their spouse, their loved ones are doing well. But in the end, it's about never giving up. It's that resiliency, it's that grit that you have to stick to something that you just trained a year for. And that's something that I, my partner, and my family wanted to support. And it's crazy to say, after 13 miles, my wife saw my pale face. I wasn't eating much, I wasn't drinking. She knew where my mind was, and it wasn't a good place. And she screamed over the audience and said, Scotty, do not give up. You have to do this. And you need to know you're not doing this just for the men and women who didn't make it back, but you're doing it for those that made it back and are still fighting. And it's times like that you don't like when your spouse is right. And we cut off over an hour of that second half of that marathon and snook by in the lick of time and crossed the finish line. And again, it was... You know,
so you married a mom, right? You married a training partner. You married she's a coach,
a nurse, a coach, a teammate.
She's like, yeah.
I married up. Let's just say that
you married up.
So
and then what happened? They were following you. They made a movie.
Yeah, they made a movie. It's called Beat Feet. It's on Amazon for free. If you're a Prime member, you can buy it. If you're not a Prime member. But it just follows the journey, follows the not just the journey of the Ironman, but beat feet is a term sometimes used in the military of getting out and running, you know, beating your feet on the ground. Sometimes it's beat your face, which not good when you hear that from someone higher ranking. You got to do some push-ups. But it's about the journey of life. Like, it's not just, you know, that Ironman that seems like it will never end, obstacle after obstacle. It's about that resiliency, about never giving up. It's training and preparing for the race ahead. Prior planning prevents poor performance. I left out one of the words, but it's what helps you get past a goal and make it to the finish line. And I think that's what really encompasses, what's really encompassed in Beat Feet.
You crushed it. Congrats.
No, thank you.
any interest in doing a Spartan race?
I'd love to. I know Luke Van Antwerp asked me to. it's timing, getting his timing, my timing, and I have to be in shape. He is a physical phenom, and I feel he would be carrying me most of the race than I him.
We gotta get you guys organized. Talk to me about this Hope Unseen. There's a logo, there's an oak tree logo.
Yeah, so I wrote a book, Hope Unseen. It's kind of a story about my life, but again, hits on the resiliency and not looking at problems or situations that you're faced with, but a bigger purpose, a bigger goal, and how you can use your life to help others. And the oak tree in particular was a comment that my classmates at West Point said, you know, Scotty, you're the oak. You know, your values, your character, you wouldn't sway. And it's not something I took lightly, but at the same time, it gave me motivation to be and to make the right decisions. But when I was in the hospital, as we hit on in the first half, I wasn't that oak. And my friends, you know, where's the oak? Where is that? Because I always questioned my faith. I questioned my friends, the anger, the animosity. And it's you know, the oak tree, it's the roots that you stand true to who you are, what you believe in.
No matter what.
No matter what. And it's the circle that encompasses that tree, that is your friends, your family, your loved ones that surround you, that help you understand and stick to your purpose. And it's those roots, and again, for me, the grace of God that enabled me to choose to write, to continue to be a stronger stanchion, a stronger oak than I ever had been before. And so for me, that's the importance of the oak tree. And it's a pretty cool symbol that we put on the hats and shirts. And so, but for me, it's living a life of purpose, living a life of resiliency, no matter what you're faced with, that you still live a purposeful life and help others around you.
So everybody out there listening or watching, they'll ask, well, that's easy to say, but it's hard to actually do. Like, I don't know what my purpose is, or I'm not as motivated. So let's boil it down to like three things, not to make your whole life's experience simplistic, but like this is a world of 3-minute abs, right? Yep. So what would you recommend? Three things.
I think I hit on a little bit, like resiliency is stepping up to whatever you have in front of you. If you're an electrician, a plumber, a homemaker, a businessman, a banker, do what you are doing to the best of your ability, no matter what obstacles. But as I shared, you know, with the oak tree, surround yourself with men and women that support you, that don't detract you, but at the same time, question you. Are you making the right decisions? Don't just say everything you're doing is correct, everything you're doing is right, because more often than not, I don't make the right decision. It's my wife who puts me in place, helps readjust. And that would be my second would be, you know, surrounding yourself with friends and loved ones that help push you towards your purpose. And then I think the third is just grit. And it's part of resiliency, but stay true to what you believe in, that character, kind of the again, going back to the oak tree, those roots, what you believe in. Don't sway to social norms, social beliefs. You know, it pretty much goes with the wind how our society believes what's right, what's wrong. But stay true to your character, to your values. And I think if you do those three things, you will find your purpose and you will live whatever purpose that has been set before you to do the best that you can and to live a fun and enjoyable life.
I think we've done, it's got to be well over 300 interviews, and you fired me up. So you're doing your job.
Oh, I appreciate
it. Sticking to your purpose. You're awesome.
No, thanks for all you're doing.
Thanks for coming.
Honored. Pleasure.
Shake hands.
There we go.
All right. Yeah, we're good.
You don't always clap at the end, by the way.
No. What a refreshing family. I would love to meet those boys. I mean, she is awesome. I never see energy walk in like that, you know? I mean, we'll talk about her later, how she just drove him to have goals and signposts that he was working towards and just
What's Wonder Woman's name, the actress's name?
The new Israeli?
No, the new
Israeli one?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, she's kind
of
like that.
I forget her name. It's on tip of my tongue. But anyway, his wife reminded me of Wonder Woman.
Like, yeah, she was truly.
She was just
clear force, just...
Oh, she was. She's got a singular purpose, right? I mean, and she was there and put all of her needs to the side for her husband during the recovery, right? And it's also because as they had children, she said she never wanted to see her sons look upon their father, that see him struggle, right? Not to think of him as anything less than what he is that not only their father, but a leader and a good man, right? And so that whatever his wound is, that it's irrelevant. And that he, you know, and that's how, that's their approach. And that he's still 100%. He's still the same guy. And we're still moving forward as individuals and as a family.
I was just going to say, I think something that's hugely valuable in the context of them bringing their lesson to other people is that they do share the struggle as well. You know, the idea, like, right. like you say, you know, they don't want it to define them. But the idea that he says, when this first happened and I first realized this isn't a dream, this is going to be there for good. That he was in a very, very dark place. And he talked about pushing people away, pushing God away, pushing, you know, these people who want to come and give him support, his teammates, his celebrities, everyone. And that one kid who he thought, okay, if this kid can still see me as worthy, maybe I do have value here. And but I thought it was important that he shared the struggle and the darkness, and that it wasn't until he reclaimed his faith and reclaimed, you know, forgiving everyone involved, that he was able to move forward.
But I think he was also able to realize that he still has stuff to give, and even though he lost that sense, you know, they say when you lose one sense, other senses get more heightened. And even though kindness or whatever, sincerity is in a sense, like, he's just giving and giving and becomes and raises up to being that leader that he's going to be.
Yeah. And then again, I just, if you think back, he talked about himself and their logo, right? The oak tree. And he was known as the oak, and that was way back. It was at least at West Point, maybe further. I'm not sure. We didn't really explore that. But here was the guy who's rooted in terra firma, right? Yeah. He's the guy that other terra West firma. Point, other cadets could look at and gain strength from, because he was kind of the pillar, right? And so when he went to those dark times, and when he was really bending, that's the resiliency. When we talk about this, is kind of the flip side of resiliency is the integrity, right? The strength, the initial framework, if you will. And you have to have that. And he had it, because he was called the oak. But it goes back to the faith that he had and the principles. Or, you know, the guy, he went to West Point in the first place, you know, because he's got that within him. And so he went back to his initial start point, if
his
you
will. Wife should go to West.
And his wife drove him there.
So
as
when
well.
That happens in life, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, I don't know if you and I ever spoke about the Spartan professor I had met that talked about this idea of structure, which reminded me of your conversation about structural integrity, right? But their whole belief system in the ancient world was structure this thing, this, I'm pointing to my body, if you're just listening and not watching, this structure, if you take care of this, everything else falls in place. Right. And so then I'm thinking about that moment in time where we're all going to snap. He's definitely got a right to snap. He's laying in that hospital bed. He's questioning everything, right? And then you got to go back to your roots, I guess, right? You got to go back to those principles and those things that stood for.
Yeah, his whole life is crushed, right? Yep. One of our other... One
but
of
that's
our...
above the ground. That's right? And but like, you somehow have to dig deep. A boxer that loses in front
of...
Well,
I was just going to say, right? we've had another interview, and yeah. I don't know where it will come out in sequence, though. It talks about losing publicly. You know, part of being a soldier is believing, especially when you're young, is that you believe you're invincible. That's guys raise their hand and they don't believe that'll happen to me. Well, here's a guy who was destined probably to be a general, probably a great leader, because he still is. And so that was his destiny. And so when this injury occurs, it's doubly hard, because he had such strong belief in where he was going. And now it's the public loss. I mean, he thinks that others around him now don't have the same confidence in him. So he loses his own confidence, and then he thinks everybody else thinks that way as well. And it's just not true. Sure. Well, and he had to learn that.
One of the things that blew me away when he talked about why he wanted to go back to active duty, it's not for the paycheck. It's not for the glory. He said, I committed to 5 years. I committed to 5 years. I've done two.
That was an unbelievable answer.
You're going to take those 3 years away from... Yeah. That's incredible.
Joe committing to 5 years of podcasts.
She committed to one podcast. 5 years later, she's still here. I could see us old and gray. Johnny, what did he say? I couldn't hear that.
Started interviewing Charlie's fans. But the one thing I want to say is like... I've been listening to Teddy Roosevelt, right? I think he's one of the greatest presidents, naturalist, conservationist. But man, did he go through a hard time. Like when his wife, when he was younger, gave labor, she dies same day as her. I mean, just he goes through all the sadness. He has asthma. He like has all these issues that are all these things that say like, no, 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 you're not going to do it. And he says like, yes, 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 I am. And he has a great quote. I'm going to read it. It says,
we should get him on the podcast. Can we?
Yeah,
get
really. Yeah.
She's been listening to him.
Well, he says, it is only through labor and painful effort, by grim energy and resolute courage, that we move on to better things. And if you talk about people who are resilient, almost everyone who comes on this show goes through the darkness to come back out to light. It's like Joseph Conrad, you know, Heart of Darkness.
Well, if you go back to, not, we're getting to the end here, but if you go back to what Tim talks about, Colonel and I talks about, this idea of structural integrity, it's only that being or that building that withstands all those terrible things that gets to still stand there and talk about it.
Yeah, so if he hadn't put in the work to be an incredibly committed, resilient, integral person to begin with, he wouldn't be talking to us about how he recovered.
Yeah. You got to have the roots.
Yeah.
You got to.
That'll be our new tagline. You got to have
Oak
the roots.
Tree. Yeah.
Nice.
Love that tagline.
Make sure you do your thing, you know. you know, make sure
be true
you,
to your roots. Subscribe.
Subscribe.
Gather acorns. Yeah.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you comment. If you don't, we're going to snip your roots.
Ooh.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Spartan Up. We're here for you to be your partner in resilience for mind and body. If you have goals, we're here for you with daily tips to keep you on track and interviews every Tuesday with inspiring, motivating people. The only thing we ask of you is to push yourself and push your limits and to help us get the word out. We're on a mission to rip 100 million people off the couch and give them the tools to keep going. So please tell your friends about us. Subscribe. Share it if you like this episode and let us know what you think. Are we on the right track? You can find us on Instagram @SpartanUpPodcast or on Twitter @SpartanUpPod. See you next week.